guess the points that I want to make, kind of the obvious one, as I look at national strategy, probably reflected best by the Quadrennial Defense Review, the defense planning document that just came out recently, I am struck by the growing realization of the importance of social science-based activities, cultural understanding, anticipating future threats, doing things up front, really knowing how to influence one's adversaries, how to prevent people from becoming one's adversaries. It's a growing realization coming out of all of our national strategy. Even when you look at documents like that which our Director for Research and Engineering, John Young, puts out, he places in his list of maybe the top 10 things to do, social science-based, cultural understanding-based activities as a key Department of Defense priority. So DOD is trying to get more and more into the business about things that you can do up front to prevent a crisis versus things that you have to do to respond to a crisis. I think that's great. Even as we talk about operational things, and there's been references to STRATCOM, where Dave Gray supports DITRA, they are surprisingly concerned about intellectual matters. I hope that doesn't come across badly, regarding the details of how adversaries make decisions. And Alenka referred a moment ago to the Strategic Deterrence Assessment Lab, and that's kind of a key area which we hope that the social science, computational science partnership here at this meeting that we develop in kind of a basic way feeds into the strategic deterrence assessment process. How do you deter folks? How do you dissuade them? How do you assure your allies? I'll get into the kind of nuts and bolts of the way DITRA is organized in a minute. I'll talk about the fact that we do campaigns. I'll mention the fact that there's something called global situational awareness, which is kind of the focus of our interaction with the Strategic Command and our role for them of being their agent for combating WMD. And when I do that, I'll claim that the way that I plug in what we're doing in the threat anticipation and the JTAC program is into this global situational awareness campaign. Also, international partnerships. This is an area where we have strong partnerships, but none stronger nor more important than with our Australian friends, where we've had an excellent collaboration fostered initially with Mike and Dave Hammond and others, and an area that we've benefited a lot from and hope to continue. The QDR, I think Alenka referred to the QDR, and I kind of rely upon that as my source document. I carry around, if not the full QDR, at least recent briefings on it, almost in my hip pocket. In fact, really, if you want to see kind of a good simplified summary of the QDR, I refer you to a briefing by Ryan Henry, the Undersecretary of Defense, which I have with me and which is accessible online. I could probably find the email on my BlackBerry and send it to you if you'd like to see it. But it's really good in describing all of this. And of course, for some of you, like me, you read the QDR every morning with your cereal, and others barely know what it is. And let me try and not speak only to those who do know what it is and say that the thrust of the QDR, in a way, it's related, first of all, to the four challenges which the nation faces. And this oval kind of reflects the vector in the QDR, which is to say, once upon a time, the emphasis of our nation was on the Cold War threat, the Soviet Union, mutually assured destruction, the notion of being able to deter a massive nuclear attack. And so that's the traditional challenge that you see in the lower left-hand box. Now, one of the points that I won't make very big in this briefing, in fact, some of the points are the opposite, but one of my points is that we can't totally neglect this traditional challenge. There may be other adversaries. The one that's most often mentioned is China, that could evolve in a way such as to present a peer adversary in the future. Hopefully they won't. Hopefully the tools that we develop here will help in a small way to prevent that. But right now, the kind of the QDR conventional wisdom is we're going away from the traditional challenge to focus on the irregular challenge which we face, for example, in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the global war on terrorism, the irregular threats, those who are weak attacking those who are strong by irregular methods, and certainly understanding terrorists and how they think, suicide terrorism, terrorism networks is a key element of that. DITRA tends to reside in the catastrophic box. In fact, the QDR does too to a great extent, because the catastrophic box is where really big and bad things could happen to the U.S. A nuclear detonation, for example, by a terrorist in New York, or an attack by the North Koreans or other adversaries upon the U.S. homeland with nuclear tipped missiles, or bioagents used in kind of a massive attack. And that's really the focus in DITRA, in trying to mitigate, but more importantly, to prevent such attacks. And there, social science modeling, social science knowledge, understanding is kind of the critical element in that to me. Now, the one that's interesting, and if you wanted to study it the most, is the disruptive challenge, in part because no one knows exactly what it is, or it's a little bit less defined, a little bit less clear than the others, but it's basically the way that nations might use either advanced technology against us, or might use technology that exists right now in unconventional ways to be able to either threaten the U.S. homeland in a physical sense, for example, a genetically engineered virus or nanobots or whatever it might be, or in a functional sense by using foot and mouth disease for economic terrorism to kill all the livestock and prevent exports. But this disruptive challenge is one where there's a lot of talk in the QDR about shaping choices and influence. In fact, in Robert Pape's talk last night, he brought up the notion about shaping the choices of those who might either support terrorists or might not, depending upon their perception of U.S. actions. I won't get into that, but I'll just say it's a really neat topic, and within ASCO in particular, we're trying to drag DITRA beyond simply a primary focus on the catastrophic challenge into also understanding better the disruptive challenges reflected both by new technologies and by new ideas. Again, kind of a primer for those not immersed in the DoD stuff. I only have one message here. Well, maybe I have two. This is kind of the eight big mission areas. These are often grouped into non-proliferation activities, which typically is accomplished through international cooperation, counter-proliferation activities, kind of force protection, war fighting, non-cooperative stuff, and then consequence management, that which you do after the event. My point, primary point in this slide, is that what you do on the left-hand side in the areas of threat reduction through international cooperation, most importantly of all, understanding your adversaries so that some are prevented from becoming adversaries, others are dissuaded from challenging you, others are dissuaded from providing support to those. That's the most important stuff you can do, the things on the left-hand side, which includes our cooperative threat reduction missions of controlling nuclear and other WMD materials worldwide, both by providing more effective controls in places that have them, like the former Soviet Union, and doing interdiction stuff to stop the smuggling. Now, I do throw a bone kind of to consequence management in the following sense, and I would say, and again, it relates to Pape's talk last night, I would consider a key element of consequence management to be stability operations and peacekeeping. And if you can do stability operations and peacekeeping in a way such as to provide the buffer that he referred to last night, to prevent civil war, to be involved in nation building, to build up scientific opportunities through things like our Iraqi Virtual Science Library, you can actually influence those who might support terrorism. And the notion of doing consequence management can feed back into the left-hand side of preventing threats from developing. So I think that's an important thing to consider. Let me make a couple of points about this, both kind of tactical and strategic. The tactical stuff is the wiring diagram. The STRATCOM Center for Combating WMD is a big new thing for DITRA. We work directly for James Cartwright, the commander of the Strategic Command, in his mission, and he's got many, many missions, but one of the important ones is combating weapons of mass destruction. Jim Tignelli, our director, reports to him directly as one of his many bosses. to accomplish that mission. We focus our activities to do that through one of our six campaigns, and I'll talk about the fact that DITRA, now, although it has a kind of a line structure consisting of four big enterprises like research and development and operations and others, that we do our business, our support for our customers, and our customers are many people, but mostly, you know, those that are most important of all are the combatant commanders, Strategic Command, Northern Command that looks at homeland defense support, Southern Command, all the regional commands that are concerned about peacekeeping worldwide. Those are our biggest customers. There are many others, OSD policy, the interagency, supporting DHS, for example, and Homeland Defense for Homeland Security. But these campaigns are the way that we relate to our customers. And our enterprises develop the stuff to make the campaigns work. They develop the technology and they develop the operating concepts. The campaign which supports the Strategic Command, and I think is the most important for our threat anticipation program, is global situational awareness. Understanding what the threats are worldwide, both through technology stuff, through medical surveillance and epidemiology, sensor fusion, space-based systems, but especially by understanding the thinking of potential adversaries. Now, we have many other wonderful campaigns which relate to the other mission areas. We have a Homeland Defense campaign, a Protecting Materials and Systems Worldwide Nonproliferation campaign, a Strategic Modernization campaign that includes Global Strike. We have a campaign, too, that relates to transforming the DITRA workforce and bringing on board folks like many of you from the University of Chicago and Argonne, trained in areas of interest to DITRA. Another kind of a minor point, you see the Advanced Systems and Concepts Office, which is right up there to the left. And you see a little box of a board of directors consisting of the four folks, the four enterprise areas that kind of look at our programs and make sure that we're properly coupled to our customers. Won't go through the other wiring stuff, but DITRA supports a lot of other customers, the Joint Staff, the Acquisition Office, and the Pentagon, which is really where we work specifically. Now, this is kind of more of an Advanced Systems and Concepts Office overview in the sense of the kinds of things that we do. And these things kind of relate to what DITRA does. We support all of those eight mission areas. But in the Advanced Systems and Concepts Office, we're the agency think tank. We're supposed to think about the future, future threats, future missions for DITRA. What will the folks who now go around and monitor treaties do in the future, for example? What will the cooperative threat reduction do in the future? Right now, will the emphasis on the former Soviet Union shift to places like Libya and others? Whole bunch of interesting stuff. But, oops, this kind of reflects the diversity of the kinds of thinking activities that we do, reflected kind of in a time way. We do stuff that will have an immediate impact. DJ was one of the creators of something called the Iraqi Virtual Science Library, which connects Iraqi scientists to the international scientific community, thereby diverting them from weapons research. We have a flu workshop coming up on Thursday and Friday that looks at the pandemic flu of 1918 through 1920 and looks at public health measures that were taken that proved to be effective in limiting the spread of that flu. So we're helping the Northern Command and others who are concerned with limiting the spread of avian flu, so as we have a foundation for responding to a biological attack, a terrorist biological attack, when we need to in the future, through developing both medical and non-medical procedures. We do a ton of stuff on strategic deterrence. We support the Strategic Deterrence Assessment Laboratory, not only with threat anticipation, but by understanding deterrence theory, carries kind of a master of that activity for us. We look at force structures. The gentleman from PA&E, we have models that look at what will the future strategic strike forces, both nuclear and non-nuclear and surveillance, look like for various international threats and scenarios. We have a university strategic partnership that looks at advanced technologies and other areas, which is important to us. We look at the nature of future military conflict, for example. As I referred to a while ago, stability operations, peacekeeping, operations other than warfare, how to go in after a conflict and quickly transition to having the host country assume the management so as to avoid conflict. Many interesting programs across the spectrum. But none more important than threat anticipation. And the JTAC is the current manifestation of our threat anticipation program. As we've alluded to, we have had major activities ranging from multi-agent simulations at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and you see one of Ed McCarrow's geographical information system-based multi-agent simulations showing network development in the Middle East. We have kind of a real-time model from our Indice small company that is now continuing to be supported by our research and development directorate that Alenka supports. We have a variety of social science-based inputs. Back in the good old days, we had Bayesian models that we evaluated. Right now, though, our focus is on the University of Chicago Argonne National Laboratory collaboration, as you've heard today and will hear through the 2 days of this conference, evaluating the utility of social science models for aiding in decision support for a variety of applications. But the role of our program here is kind of the basic input, which can then be rolled up into models which can be used by analysts, but that isn't really the focus here. It's to develop the foundation for that and also to look at verification and validation. And we have several activities going along in that category, including Argonne, including Nancy's activities at Sandia National Laboratories and others. Many accomplishments, and you can ask me about those, in part supporting our Australian friends and looking at Indonesian stability, but again, topic of another talk. I did want to mention the fact that we have other university activities, and it's relevant here because we are trying to drag those folks, the Penn State team, the UNM team, University of New Mexico, and others into also doing more fundamental social science-based stuff. Don't have that started yet, but hope to in the future. And my time is up. I'll simply end by saying that within DITRA, we do lots of stuff. A lot of it is hardware, nuts and bolts, advanced technology, operational concepts, homeland defense. But within ASCO, we have a much greater emphasis in the social science area. Now, Mike's activities in our Combating WMD Center, Alenka's activities in the Research and Development Organization are starting to build the nucleus of social science-based activities in these two important enterprise areas. But for ASCO, this is kind of our first big thing, and we intend to push upon this hard. We think it's become increasingly important, and it's going to be an emphasis area of ours for years to come. Thanks.